So, friends, even though the theme or the title of the retreat has been listed as awareness of death, I prefer the title, or it includes awareness of living and dying, because really to understand what death is, you have to understand what life is. Real life, not the average person's idea of what life is. Wake up in the morning, go to work, have a family, and do various things, and then you die. That may be the mundane or the common worldly idea about what life is, but it's much deeper than that. And it's only when you really understand the life process, I mean the life that's going on under the skin and in the nervous system, moment by moment, only then can you have a better appreciation of what death is. Now I want to just give a kind of a general outline of the various topics or ideas that we're going to be exploring and contemplating during these 4 days. So, you know, as Bhante-ji mentioned, you know, death is really the most important part of our life, although most people, you know, don't see it that way, but you know, life is not certain actually, but death is the only thing that is certain in life, and everything that is born has to die. In fact, when you're born, you get a free one-way ticket to the cemetery or the crematorium. It may be the only free ticket you get. And so death is totally free in this life. Life is not free, because you have to pay taxes, you have to live in a house and conform to the norms of society and all that. So, you know, living is not free. Of course, in modern days, dying in a hospital is not free either, because they make a commercialize it. But anyway, so the only thing really that's certain in life is death. And as Bhante-ji mentioned, and as most of you know, it's not a very popular topic to discuss. But it's really the most important topic to understand in order to overcome the fear of death. But as I mentioned, in order to understand what death is, you really need to understand what life is. And if you don't enter fully into life, then you won't be able to enter fully into death either. So of course, the general practice of meditation, such as, you know, Vipassana meditation especially, and cultivating awareness, and, you know, tuning in to the feelings and sensations and the thoughts of one's body and mind, or to get more grounded in the present moment, that is really one of the kind of main preparations for the dying. But to die in a skillful way, you have to live in a skillful way, because basically the way you live is the way you're going to die. If you live with lots of fear in your life about various things, fear of this, fear of that, then when you die, that same fear is going to be consuming your mind. Or if you live very greedy, with greed and desire for so many things, then also when you die, the mind is not going to be able to let go of this world, and will be clutching and clinging to things that it can't take with it, and therefore also suffer accordingly. So, or if you have a lot of hatred or anger, You're full of a lot of people that you haven't forgiven, full of lots of resentments. If you die with these sort of states of mind, then also that is what's going to follow you to the next life. It's called unfinished business. And so whatever, you know, busyness that your mind still has, especially in terms of greed, hatred, ego-centered delusion, then that's the kind of business that one's going to have to again, come again in another time and place or world, another life, to sort of work that out. So that's why in order to die in a skillful way, to die with mindfulness, to die with awareness, then you have to cultivate awareness, you have to live in awareness. Because the moment of death is really the most momentous time of our life in terms of how the mind will be affected at the time of death. Anyway, so on this topic, we're going to be, you know, there's there's different types of death. I mean, there's a death of our own body. So people are, you know, concerned about, of course, old age, sickness, and old age is a part of that. And so people have fear about their own death. And then they have fear or grief about the death of their loved ones, people that you're the most attached with. And some people have fear because they're fear of being alone. Oh, my husband or my wife or these persons are dying, and I'm going to be alone. So there's, you know, not wanting the other person to die because of one's own fear of, say, loneliness. Or, you know, being without their help. So there's a death of ourselves, there's death of our loved ones, and then there's, you know, also the death of others in the world that's happening every day. You know, thousands and thousands, 100,000 people dying all over the world every day. And because of that death, there's, you know, the emotions concerning the death, as I already mentioned, fear, and just mainly the fear of death is, you know, really the biggest fear that most people encounter. Almost every other fear that you have is the fear of death. You know, people are afraid of the dark, right? Because they think somebody's a boogeyman is going to jump out and stab them. Or they're afraid of heights, you know, afraid they're going to fall off and get killed. Or they're afraid of sickness, old age. They're afraid of going in different places. But it all comes back to the fear of, you know, either getting seriously injured and or leading to the death. And there's also grief, especially with our loved ones, or even when we encounter ourselves, if we, you know, find ourselves with a terminal illness or some other life-threatening thing, there's that you know, grief that arises, and especially with the loved ones, and sorrow, or also then repenting, knowing that you did a lot of unskillful things in the life, so there's a, you know, sort of guilt, worry, and fear about things that you didn't do, that you should have done, and things that you did do that you shouldn't have done. And so all these things also come up to harass the mind, not only during our life, but especially at the time of death, when you still have these sort of thoughts in your mind, then it plays even a more important part. Then there's different kinds of death. There's the physical death of the body, where the mind leaves the body, this physical body dies. And that can happen due to the lifespan. People reach a certain age. Usually, you know, after the age of 70 or 80, and the body starts slowly shutting down, and the average lifespan is, you know, between 65 and 100 years, I suppose. So that's the death of the physical body. But then there's also called momentary death, in which we're actually dying every moment. Part of us. That means, you know, every moment or minute, thousands and thousands of cells of your body are, or even probably millions, are dying. And every moment our mind is changing. And consciousness arises and passes away, you know, moment by moment. And every time it arises new. Because every experience you have alters the mind in one way or another. So it's not the same mind that arises in two consecutive moments, because somehow it's been altered. Of course, we don't see that. So that's called a momentary death. And there's also the death of our thoughts. A thought arises, lasts a few moments, maybe longer, and then, you know, it vanishes and some other thought arises. And emotions and feelings, painful feelings, pleasant feelings. So all these things are types of momentary death. There's death of the mind in terms of feelings, perceptions, thoughts, emotions that are arising moment by moment. And ultimately, there's ego death. That means when the illusion of a separate I, you know, even when that is let go of and transcended, but of course only in the case of reaching enlightenment, certain stages of enlightenment. But the ability to even let go of that ego. You know, we have to let our bodies die, but the ego is the last thing that the mind clings on to, its memory, cherishing its memories. Oh, I did this, I did all these things when I was young, and I want to go here and there and in the future. But even that is, within the Buddhist tradition, that is the real death, ego death. With the attainment of enlightenment. People like the Buddha and Arahants, when they attain full enlightenment, they reach ego death, even before their body dies. And so that's actually called dying before you die. But ultimately, that's the real death. So death of the physical body is one thing. But in Buddhism, it's just, you know, within the idea of about rebirth, is simply discarding one set of smelly clothes, and you're reborn, you put on another set of clothes, whether it's in an animal body, human body, a deva body, a hungry ghost body, or a few other types. But the mind continues. So these are just different aspects about the death that we also want to try to cultivate, so that one has a better idea, a more fuller idea about what the process of death is, so that you can hopefully have a better understanding of that and less fear. And, you know, death is certain, but the moment of death is not certain. And so that's why, you know, and even though, you know, many people die when they're old, many, many young people, you know, die when they're still quite young. I see even in this group here, there's many of us that are, you know, or a number of us that are, you know, over 60 or 65, older folks, and it looks like there's some younger folks, probably, you know, less than 35, as young in my book now. but you know, death affects everyone, the young in the old. So we don't know when we may die. There's something called the four anys, that any thing can happen to anybody at any time, in any place. That means sickness, accidental death, dying in any number of ways, or any point in the day or time, a doctor could call up and say, well, we found a little lump, positive lump or something, all these things can happen, and will we be prepared for that? Because it's being unprepared for death, getting caught with your pants down, to use that phrase, is the worst possible way to die. Because the mind will panic, and it will clutch on to anything it can kind of grab a hold of, and that can also have its negative consequences. So anyway, we'll be discussing in the course of different Dhamma talks about the death process, also about ways to prepare oneself for death of oneself, even for loved ones, how to deal with the grief and loss of loved ones, and how to sort of prepare them also for that, and yourself also for these realities that definitely will come. So this is sort of the overall kind of scope of the various subjects that we'll be covering in this retreat. But basically the first 2 days is going to be on just trying to cultivate our basic meditation, using the body and the breathing as our initial way of grounding the mind in the present moment. Because it's really about living in the present moment. Even though death might sound like you imagine it's going to be some years away, but actually when it happens, it's going to happen in the present moment. So death is actually just an idea that you have that's going to happen at some other time. And so people, they're under the illusion that they'll have more time to prepare later on. But the reality is that we may not have any time to kind of put it off. So there's the sense of urgency of seeing the practice of Dhamma as a sort of a preparation for death. But again, don't get me wrong, it's not that we want to die, certainly not. And this body is a very valuable organism, and we need it to practice the Dhamma. But we should use it in the best possible way so that we can live a life happy here and now, and even in the future, then that happiness will follow us. But if you live miserable now and confused now, you're going to be miserable and confused in the next life as well. So the first 2 days we're going to be trying to cultivate a basic mindfulness concentration, and mindfulness centered in the breathing body, is most of you already basically the Vipassana type of meditation, Samatha and Vipassana meditation, in order to hopefully overcome the various types of hindrances so that you can focus more closely on the topics of in the last few days, trying to observing more closely the moment-to-moment process going on within our mind, and in contemplating those the inevitability of that. So But does anybody have any questions about any of that so far?
I am wondering if this will also include the idea of somebody being very, very sick and the time between knowing that their death is approaching, the dying. I know you said we would be speaking of understanding and living
yes.
in order to have a good death. Is there any help in that? If you are given 3 months to live, is there help in this practice of using those 3 months?
We'll give you a year, okay? We'll give you 1 year.
Okay, I'll take the year.
Okay, it's called a year to live.
A year to live.
So, you know, that is, in fact, there's one of the books in the library is on that topic, actually. So it's meaning, you know, if you had 1 year to live, what would you want to do? You have your bucket list, you want to climb Mount Everest, and you want to visit all the 8 wonders of the world and this and that. Is that really going to help you in the next life? Mm-hmm. Or would you use that year to forgive your enemies, to clean out your mind of greed, hatred, and delusion, of train your mind to live in the present moment with acceptance and so on? So like that. So yes, definitely. You know, that time, if any, you know, if you know you have a terminal illness, you know, that's the time, or your loved ones and so on, to try to steer them and to, you know, avoid allowing their mind to accumulate more mundane, worldly cravings and attachments that's just going to make their burden of separation much more difficult. So yes, that's also, you know, that's part of the preparation for death, actually. But it has more urgency, of course, when you get that letter from the doctor saying you have 6 months or a year. But, you know, sometimes that might not be enough, actually. You see, we spent 30, 40, 50, 60 years accumulating a bunch of rubbish in our mind. You know, I mean, it's different levels of greed, hatred, delusion. And to expect that you're going to be able to clean it all out even in a year or two is kind of wishful thinking. Of course, you can do some good work towards it, but the whole emphasis is on learning how to live one's life, even if you're still, you know, young in your 20s or 30s or 40s. You can avoid the mistakes that so many older people who didn't have that luxury of learning the Dhamma when they were younger. And, you know, they accumulated so many more types of attachments that, you know, might take much longer to get rid of. So, yeah. So, you know, the practice of mindfulness really is, in Vipassana, is one of the most strongest types of practice to help this process along. And, you know, just learning how to live in the present moment. Because when you're able to live in the present moment and just sort of float or flow with whatever is coming your way, whether it's painful feeling, pleasant feeling, pleasure or pain, fame or ill repute, the worldly winds of gain and loss, you know, this is just the flow of life. The flow of the material life is just a series of impermanence. And sometimes we have things, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we're healthy, sometimes we're sick. And undergoing so many types of changes. And to be able to know that that's the nature of life and to flow with it. So if you can flow with it and be in the moment, you're saying if you are here and now, you will be there then. That means if you can live in the present moment, accepting and opening up and embracing whatever it is, whether it's physical pain, whether it's grief, whether it's confusion, in any type of mental state or physical state, if you can open to that and accept it for what it is with mindfulness and wisdom and learn how to skillfully manage it, so it doesn't further increase its hooks in you, or further increase its painful effects. Then when it comes time to die, then you will be in a much better position to open up to that as well. But if you can't endure the pain in your knees from sitting for an hour in meditation, or what other types of pains and thoughts, then it's not much likely you're going to be able to deal with the powerful energies that arise at the time of death. So in a sense, you know, every time you meditate, in a way, is a kind of a preparation for that. But again, it's a happy preparation. So, any other questions about sort of the content of the retreat?
Bhante, you had mentioned when a death occurs, your body dies, and then the attachment to I also dies. So,
no, I didn't say the attachment to I dies.
Or the ego.
No, the attachment doesn't. Only if you're enlightened, it dies. For the ignorant person, that is what continues, actually.
Oh, so that will continue to next life.
Yeah, what the average person calls death, the physical body, that's not real death in from the Aryan point of view, from the Dhamma point of view, because the ego is still continuing on. But it's only when you die to the past, you die to the future, and you're living fully in the present moment. Because all problems are problems of basically the past and future. Think of any problem that you have and see if it's not connected in some way to the past or future. Even if you're getting sick now, oh, next month somebody's coming, I won't be able to go with them, I have this and that. So you get worried because your mind is in the future. So that's why the whole training about living and dying is basically the process of learning how to live more fully in the present moment with awareness and especially of wisdom. Yes.
It's been recommended to me by a number of people to do it on a regular.
Of course, contemplating the decay of the body is kind of indirectly connected. You know, what happens after death to the body, but that's not really important. That's important for attachment, physical lust. If you have lust and sexual desire, and every time you see somebody, you know, the desires come, then that training is to see how that underneath the skin, this body is just bones. You know, it's just these various types of odors and bones, and to overcome and to see what happens to the body after death. Now there's some, we might get into some of that, but there's what I call in the library, one of those books is what I jokingly call the Buddhist Playboy. Or X-rated Playboy. That means it's a book with a green cover that shows the day-to-day decomposition process of a real corpse. It was taken in a monastery in Thailand. It was pretty gross. But, that's the ultimate nature of the body, but of course we never see it because, you know, we don't have access to that sort of thing. But when you see that, so you can, you know, contemplate those pictures, because that in a very graphic, more than just mentally thinking, oh yes, this stage and that stage, but actually seeing it. But I warn you, you might have nightmares. No, not really. But anyway, yes, that's part of the process.
Well, see, Bhante, I had a question along those lines. Like with that green book, if And it's helpful for people to maybe just look at the first picture and not, what I would say, jump into the deepest part of the pool first.
Let them look, let them look.
Oh.
They're adults. If they get sick with the first one, then don't go to the second one. If you can stomach the first one, turn the page. But yeah, that's the whole thing. You know, we get attached to these bodies, but you know, underneath the skin, this process is going on all the time. Anyway, so we wanted to have one meditation period this evening, just to kind of settle your minds, and then we're going to be, you know, entering the noble silence after that. So you've already been sitting now for a while, so just go ahead and stand up briefly and stretch your legs.